At the temple, in there's plenty of folders. Some just like this. Some even have little pockets in the front, both ends. So if you the paper, so if you need any of those things, get them done. They're available. And hopefully, we'll have a different heating system besides these things. I'd like to begin. I think this is a very big topic to take the whole of the first canto and summarize it in 7 days, or 7 hours. So, what I've decided to do is to take it by sections and to give myself a little starting break. I'll just give you a kind of outline of how things are going to go. The starting point will be for the first couple of days, today and tomorrow, we'll cover chapter 1 today, 2 and 3 tomorrow. And then we're going to start moving faster. Oh, I brought copies of the... Where was your purpose? You pass around a 3x5 Bhagavatam Canto 1, Part 1 for everybody to look through. And when we get to the other parts, what I think I'll do is we'll just photocopy certain pages of verses and work from that. So, first day, Chapter 1, second day, Chapters 2 and 3. They fit together. Then chapters 4 through 7, and that will, so that means the first 3 days we'll be working from this volume through chapter 7. Then chapters 8 and 9, they all go together. The fourth day, 10, 11, and 12. If I could just summarize what those chapters are, I suppose. Just like there's 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita, 19 chapters in the first canto. I think what I won't do is right now, I won't summarize what the chapters are. But what I will do is as we go along, I'll hand out something, a copy of which each of you can receive. And then, they'll have a summary of what each of the chapters of the first canto are, a real quick summary. And we'll just get right into the topic first, but if you want to help out with talking a little bit. I didn't choose the title of the one to speak, but the editors, in fact, did not get it for it. Davis or Torres from another editorializing things chose that title. It's an appropriate title because Prabhupada uses that in the purports of this canto and in the second canto, identifying that the first two cantos are compared to the lotus feet of the Lord. And in the first first canto Prabhupada specific remark is that the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam should begin from the first canto. He raises the question. Persons may say that, and I even heard this just recently, that in the course of traveling, one man asked me, "Oh, you're giving a class on the first canto, what about the tenth canto? How can you give a class for a whole week long on the first canto and ask me anything about the tenth canto?" That's how people who know something about Srimad Bhagavatam know it, that you know the real juicy stuff is in the tenth canto. But even in the first canto, there are, beginning with chapter 5, the first four chapters are largely philosophy, 4.5. And pastimes of Krishna, or involving Krishna, begin with chapter 5. Not Rasalila, but the pastimes of Krishna with the Pandavas. So, Krishna is there in the feature of his lotus feet, not only in his lotus face. So this lotus feet idea has to do with a number of things. One of them is that we'll go over this a little more in the course of this class, but the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada is called a postgraduate literature, meaning that Bhagavad Gita, which is the philosophical portion of Mahabharata, is the undergraduate or beginning ABC, and upon, in this canto, this volume that you have, he makes the comment specifically, and after thoroughly understanding Bhagavad Gita, then the graduate can go on to the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the lotus feet is these first two cantos indicate an introduction to what is very, very advanced subject matter. So it's very, very important in order to understand the advanced subject matter to understand the preliminary subject matter. And I'll make references as we go along. Even in the course of the first canto, this first chapter is very, very important, because later on in this canto, indirect, but sometimes even direct reference is made to statements that are made earlier, and then they're expanded upon further in this canto, and then leading into other subject matters of other cantos. So it's essential to get a very clear picture. Then I'll also, if you can look in chapter 1, text number 15, which is on page 75, reference is made there to sages who have completely taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. This is a reference from an earlier verse stated in the same chapter already, text number 6. We'll put back, that's on 64. This text 6 is indicating the qualifications of the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the qualifications described here, the third one, is one who has received them through proper guidance. So, text 15 is saying there are many sages who have completed, Sutta is the best amongst them, but he's the best amongst many who have attained shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is, they've approached the feet of the Lord through disciple succession. Prabhupada has told us that the pure devotees of the Lord are situated at the Lord's lotus feet. Krishna is not alone, and they're all assembled there, worshiping him, serving him at his lotus feet. And the context of this first, the message of this first chapter, one of the very, very strong messages to the section that exclusively focuses on it in its duality, is the importance of hearing the message through discipling succession. So, approaching the lotus feet of the Lord means hearing from the realized persons from the very, very beginning of the narration. Another comment about, it'll be clear in the first canto, it's true for other parts of the Bhagavatam, things are not, the subject matter is not chronologically organized, but it's organized according to subject matter. So we'll attempt to illustrate why the ordering is in a certain order, why subject matters are approached in the order that they're approached. It's not chronological. In this first canto, another, this whole course, many basic philosophical conceptions are addressed, and a whole chunk of them are addressed in the first three verses. Prabhupada has called these first three verses of the first canto, the first chapter, the prelude to Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll see what that means. And then, because it's the prelude, the rest of the chapter is expanding on that prelude, and the rest of the Bhagavatam is expanding on the first chapter. Because you can't know the rest of the whole Bhagavatam. Because in this very first chapter, there are six questions, and we're going to identify what those six questions are posed by the sages. Another very important thing about the first canto is, as we hear in the prelude verses, that this is rasa tattva literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, meaning it is literature that evokes great transcendental feeling. It illuminates what great transcendental feeling is. And it begins right away evoking that from the reader. The many passages in the first canto that deal with feelings of separation right away. Separation between the devotee and Krishna. In anticipating Krishna's leaving Hastinapur, there's one chapter where three times Krishna stopped. The great feeling was there, that shade. And then Krishna leaves. And then Krishna enters Dwarka after a long absence. And then the message is there from Arjuna that Krishna has left the planet. And Dhritarashtra leaves home. Leaves this great, very, very powerful emotional description, encounters are there in this right away in the first canto. So the lotus feet of the Lord are not devoid of great and powerful transcendental feeling for Krishna. So hopefully that's another one of the understandings or the benefits that we'll get from looking closely at the entire canto of how it's set up. So now I'd like to begin by just giving a quick discussion of how the first chapter is proposed. So there are total 23, I believe, verses in this chapter. The first three, again, Prabhupada said this is a prelude. And then verses 4 through 7 give the qualifications. In this prelude, the Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified. What is the literature? Because that's what a prelude does. It gives you some idea of what's to come. So what is this Srimad Bhagavatam? What is its message? And what is the significance of it? These are standard, these verses are standard types of verses in transcendental writings. So following those verses, the next four, five, six, seven, next four verses, indicate the qualification of someone to present the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then right away, verses 9 through 13 gives the six questions asked by the sages. Further in the chapter, those questions are repeated, expanded upon a little bit, but in those short verses, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 5 verses, other subject matters are also presented there, including the qualification of the hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the next section of verses, so 14 through 20, focus on the most successful means for this age for spiritual realization. And it's a partial address to the first question asked by the sages. Then the concluding three verses are the last of the six questions is presented here. The very last verse of this chapter is question number 6. So, kind of the preceding two verses, 21, 22, they're preparing to hear from Sutta Goswami. They're accepting him as the captain of the ship meant to cross over the ocean of material existence in this age of Kali, and they're recognizing that the age of Kali has begun. They're fastening their seatbelts and getting ready for the first one. So now I'd like to go through the subject matters in prelude a little bit to get some feel. The opening, you can use your books if you like. On page 43, the opening Sanskrit is presented. And I'll make three specific notes that you can pay attention to. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This opening line of the whole text is indicating that this is an explanation of the Vedanta Sutra, Janmatyasa Yataha, also. So, Prabhupada indicates that this term Vasudev, which later also comes in the form of one of the questions asked by the sages is, please explain the transcendental appearance of the personality of Godhead in this world. So that standard Sanskrit terminology is Vasudeva, the all-pervading supreme truth. And he is the son, Krishna is the son of Vasudeva or Vasudeva. So the first line is indicating Krishna is that source. The commentary of the Vedanta Sutra then follows. Yanvadi Asya Yataha. And very last line, Satyam Param Dhimadi. Jiva Goswami has indicated this is to show that Vyasadeva is indicating this particular verse as an explanation of the Gayatri Mantra. Not an entire exhaustive explanation, but as an explanation of the Gayatri Mantra. Upon whom are we to meditate? So very clearly he's identifying upon whom we are to meditate. And another aspect of this first verse is this Muyanti Yatsura Yahat Tejo Gari Mirgam Yaha Vidimayo Yatra Trisargo Mrsha. That is, in the first verse, Vyasadeva is explaining the relationship of Krishna to his various energies. And these various energies are identified by their appearing in this. First, he's identified that Krishna is the origin, this janma, or the origin of the creation, the maintenance, and annihilation, as well as the creator, maintainer, and annihilator. He's the source of everything and everyone. Then, those energies that he is the source of appear to be real, although they're not. That which makes them appear to be real is none other than Krishna himself, or the origin himself. In other words, the relationship between the energies of creation and the energetic source is being right away clarified. They're not real, but they have their relationship. In other words, the Chitta Veda Veda Tattva is being introduced in the first verse. They appear to be real, but they're not real. The specific that's being said is, it appears that there is water within fire, or land on water, just like seeing an island in the middle of the ocean. It appears like that, and it appears, we know of a mirage where it appears that there's water in a hot desert or in sand, or driving along the road it may appear in a hot summer that there's water puddles on the road, but we know better. But it appears that it's there. So the appearance of something where it obviously doesn't exist, this bewildering, deluding potency of the Lord, is coming directly from Him. And then the contrast is being said, He alone is above all of that. Satyam Param Dhimahi. We should understand, when we're speaking about Vasudeva, Krishna, He has created all of this, but He is above all of it also. So some basic understanding of God and His energies. The next verse is indicating that, I'll jump ahead and say that the third verse is saying that because all this information that's in the first and second verses is explained within the Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore it is the topmost of all literature. All these things, because the personality of Godhead with the first verse is identified, and the second verse is also identified, is revealed in this Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore it is the topmost of all literature. I said it in a kind of summary way previously. These prelude verses prepare you for the text. And it's giving the glories of the text. And the goal of the text, the goal of the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is, in a summary way, identified here. To fix the hearer's consciousness on Krishna. And who is Krishna? These verses are identified in a simple way, or introductory way. So, right away, in text 2, Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. Vyasadeva Mahamuni Krite. He compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam specifically to teach the highest truth. So, in this canto, later, in a few chapters later, this statement will be explained, all these statements will be explained, this statement will particularly be explained. How is it that Vyasadeva came to compile Srimad Bhagavatam after all of the other Vedic literatures? And why Srimad Bhagavatam, the glory of the Srimad Bhagavatam is being revealed within the text itself. It's a little self-patronizing, one might think, that the author is describing the glories of the text which he's compiling. But it's not an uncommon thing to do that. Even in other texts, in the Buddha Purana and other portions of the Vedic literature, this Srimad Bhagavatam is also specifically appreciated as the topmost of transcendental literature. So, as the first verse was saying, that there is a deluding potency of the personality of Godhead that makes things appear to be real, although they're not real. In this Srimad Bhagavatam, it will distinguish reality from that illusion. Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the, you could say, the statement of purpose. The trumpets are sounding and the heralds are letting everyone know. This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam will attempt to do. And anything that is a compromise with material desires and the material attractions of the living entity is not going to be a subject matter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just so that this purpose can be accomplished, the bewildering potency will be reduced. Then this third verse is also establishing the function of the Srimad Bhagavatam in presenting rasa. In contrast to Vedanta Sutra, which does not attempt to do that. Vedanta Sutra, this is the commentary of Vedanta Sutra. But in Vedanta Sutra, the direct description of the different relationships and relishing of enjoyment in those relationships between the personality of God and the living entity, that's not covered or not explicitly identified. So the Srimad Bhagavatam preface or prelude here is saying this will be the main feature of the presentation of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. And included in these first verses also is some glorification of Shukadeva Goswami. Because it's Shukadeva Goswami who first, you, most of you know this stuff, but he's the first one who uttered the message of Bhagavatam. We'll hear about it more in the course of this first canto. But before, so these three verses are very much like how Krishnadas Kaviraj, it's a classical style. At the beginning of every chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he makes a one verse summary of what the whole chapter will be like, or sometimes two verses, summarizing the topic. So that's what we're getting in the prelude. So we're hearing that Shukadeva Goswami is the one who delivered this Srimad Bhagavatam message for the very first time. Because the four nutshell verses, the Chatur Shloki of Srimad Bhagavatam, they had already been compiled by Vyasadeva. But as we'll hear, he was feeling some despondency or insufficiency due to not having expanded that whole topic of the glories of the Lord. So the glories of the Lord were completely compiled by Vyasadeva, delivered to Shukadeva Goswami, and publicly others of the sages present on the planet at the time of Maharaj Bhikshu's passing, and then many later, the Naivisharanya assembly, they hadn't heard, so they were very anxious to hear. So Shukadeva Goswami is a very, very important person in the whole text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, I would like, along with keeping track of time, because you have to present a summary of the first canto in 7 days isn't going to be an easy thing to do. I'm going to attempt to do a little bit of making clear the story line, and then kind of bringing in also the philosophy, because both are there. The Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the Puranas, the Bhagavat Purana, identified as the spotless Purana or Amala Purana. Just like Amala Purana, Amala Purana. So, spotless Purana means that the philosophy of complete transcendence is presented, but it's presented in historical form. So I mentioned that the first, say, 4.5 chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam are without much story. Some group of verses is 4 through 7, and it starts off verse 4, once upon a time. So the narration is beginning. The selection of Naimisharanya was made by sages who knew that the age of Kali had begun. So this dates the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is after Krishna's departure. We'll hear it again. This is a question for scholars, but this verse is an important one for scholars. It dates Srimad Bhagavatam as coming after the beginning of the age of Kali, after the departure of Lord Krishna, after the departure of Prithvi Maharaj. So in these four verses, who is qualified? The last part of text 3 was saying, Sukadeva Goswami, he's the qualified one. Now we're going to hear that Suta Goswami is selected to speak. And what is his qualification? So there's three qualifications mentioned specifically. It comes in verse 6. That he heard in the cycle of succession. That's the first of them. It's also specifically mentioned that he's free from vice. That's the second qualification of the speaker of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says no one should dare sit on the seat of Vyasa unless he is free from these vices. And that he has assimilated this knowledge. It's succinctly stated here. I'll show you where it's expanded upon, even in this chapter, when to speak of further chapters, getting a focus or a fix on what these verses are saying is important. The qualification of someone who is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. An auspicious place is selected. Just like this nice bathroom. Deepanagari down. Auspicious place is selected. You can come from many distant places to come sit in this factory room. Deepanagari and hear messages about Krishna. And a qualified, the audience who have assembled, they're very, very exalted souls, because the reason for their assembling is not to see to their own self-interest, but to see to the welfare of everyone. They have a very, very clear idea that they want to have a sacrifice for 1,000 years. They want to do something for the next 1,000 years that will diminish the effect of the age of Kali. And they're completely convinced that they've selected the right place, they've selected the right object of their sacrifice, that is Lord Vishnu, and they're convinced that by simply hearing the message about the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, that's the best thing. The Prabhupada gives his explanation, just like that this is another verse coming in the Bhagavatam later, that by putting water on the root of a tree, all the branches become nourished. Prabhupada comments, if a branch is broken off, it doesn't get nourishment. But all persons who are connected in some way with the personality of Godhead, they like the branches on a tree, they will get ultimate spiritual benefit. And as Prabhupada also comments, they understood, they had faith in this principle, otherwise they wouldn't have assembled there for this 1,000 year sacrifice. They had faith in the principle that the spiritual well-being would naturally take care of the material well-being. One would follow the other. So, they chose the selection of who would be their principal spokesperson was a very important, you can imagine, a very important consideration. And the text 6 is identified. We want you to be that person, Sutta Goswami, because of these three qualifications. It has direct bearing on the topic of the lotus feet of the Lord. You are the best of those who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, because you heard in the cyclic succession what we haven't heard. And you've assimilated it all. There is some mention directly in the verse also to the Puranas and the histories as well. In Prabhupada's translation, Puranani, Tvaya Talu Puranani. So our modern scholars, they don't put the same emphasis on the Puranas as the sages of Nami Shivaji did. But they're explanatory literatures, giving us understanding of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire Vedic literature. Later on, Prabhupada also comments that one is another verse I'll point out as we're going along. But the speaker must be prepared to answer questions. And opposing points of view, he has to be able to defeat. So specifically, he says the six material philosophies, classical approaches to a non-theistic understanding of life. These must be thoroughly understood by the Bhagavatam speaker in order to refute them. So, now the questions. Everybody likes to identify with the questions. Six questions of the sages. And pay close attention, because the homework will be for you to look through chapter 2 and find out the answers. Which verses have the answers to these six questions? You have to know what the questions are to identify the answers. You can start with text number 9. Leaves therefore being blessed with many years. So his glories have been described. Now we're hearing what he's capable of giving the response to. Here's the question. What's the absolute and ultimate good for people in general? So I want to point out that this very question comes up again in this chapter. It comes up again at the conclusion of this canto also. And it appears in several times throughout the canto. The conclusion of the canto, but I'm not spoiling the punchline of the story, but telling us. At the conclusion of this canto, Maharaj Pariksit has already given up his kingdom. He's sitting on the banks of the Ganga. And sages from all over the universe have come to witness his departure going back to Godhead. So he asks the sages assembled there this same question. It's an important question. And as he's asking the sages, in Prabhupada's purport, he indicates they couldn't reach any agreement. No consensus. They did things by consensus management also. So, no consensus. Then Sukadeva Goswami arrived on the scene. And everyone immediately offered him the principal speaker seat. They could immediately appreciate his qualification. And Maharaj Pariksit posed this very same question again. within 10 verses, he's saying, asking it twice. In addition, Maharaj Pariksit is asking not only what's good for the all around and absolute welfare of everyone, but even more specifically, what is the necessity of someone who's about to die? What is the best thing for that person to do? Of course, he was that person. And Prabhupada comments that of the two, the latter is more important, because everyone could die at any moment, so whatever we're doing that's for ultimate welfare, that's in preparation for that moment. Antenarayana Smriti. Remember personality of God. So what's the means? Abhideya. What is the practice that we should be engaged in? What's the process to become fixed in perfect transcendence? That's the first question. Then, very nicely, the next verse, text 10, is indicating why they asked that question. Because they could recognize this is a pretty rotten age, and it's just beginning, just getting underway, so that it won't be forgotten, because people in this age forget things very quickly. In other words, their motivation is out of compassion. All these people in this age of Kali, especially as it progresses more and more, they won't know what they should do for themselves. This is ignorance. To not know what is to be done. So he then asks the next question. So this is in text 11. The next question is saying, there are so many statements in all the scriptures, therefore, please select the essence and explain it. What's the essence of all scriptures? It's the essential message of all scriptural teaching. This is question number 2. So, there are several reasons why this question is particularly important and a little bit different from the previous one. The previous one is saying people in this age have really bad qualities. But because of their bad qualities, even if they knew all of what is to be done, they couldn't do it all. As Prabhupada is indicating in the purport one very succinctly. The Varnashram system is to recognize so many different material distinctions that people have. And the directions are given within the scripture how, based upon those material differences, they can gradually, by performing so many detailed activities, they can gradually come to a higher position spiritually. But people in this age, they don't have the attraction, they're lazy, they don't have proper persons to guide them. And another is that the Vedic literatures are so vast, that's very clearly pointed out in the verse directly. The Vedic literatures are so vast, people won't even bother to go through it. So make a summary statement for us. Make it real easy. What is the essential message of all the scriptural presentations? The next is found in the next verse. Text 12. So question 3 is to explain the jhana. And the next is to explain the karma. So that's 3 and 4. Text 13 has actually 2 of them. Explain the Lord's narrate for us the pastimes of the Lord. But in the course of just hearing because this is an important thing, hearing the narrations of the Lord is also just hearing it. Is purified. But Sutta Goswami has a very special qualification. He knows the inner purpose of these leelas. So explain that purpose. And also, we want to hear all of the various incarnations. So you can expect, and it's going to come very quickly in the third chapter, then again, second canto, presentations are made of a summary description of the incarnations that the sages are asking, we want to hear. And then as we go on to the Bhagavatam, that explanation is further expanded. More is told about Ram and Ishinga and Varaha and Kurma. More is told. Expanded. You can imagine, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, I forget the number. 18,000 verses are on this planet, and many, many, many times more there on the higher planets. So these are the essential questions, which are simply expanded upon. The Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but an expansion of the reply, a response to these questions, and other questions that come from those questions, or those answers. So three is the purpose of the Lord's appearance and his activities. Please give us the narration of those activities. And then the fifth one, which will appear, it will show up again. The fifth one is the science of God, or science of Godhead. This gets a lot of attention. This last question, question five, becomes the expanded explanation of texts 14 to 20. That is, what is the science of Godhead? What is the significance of hearing the science of Godhead from the previous acharyas, or from the acharyas? From those who have assimilated perfectly. The essential process is hearing. You need to know, because time is running quickly. In those verses, 14 through 20, several points are made, including how hearing the topics of transcendence are just as good as being present when those past tenses are being performed. Statement is made in this first chapter. Later on in the canto, there are several places where that's verified by further historical description. Like, for example, when Arjun returns back to Hastinapur and can't speak before his brother Yudhisthira, but then just in between his tears starts reminiscing about Krishna who just left. In the course of that narration, he realizes that Krishna was so kind, although he left, he still made his association identically available through those remembrances. And those remembrances were possible through the recalling and speaking of those activities and teachings that Krishna engaged with Arjuna in. So, in this section, in the first chapter, Prabhupada's, the verses are indicating, Prabhupada's comments are also indicating, that imagine the mercy of someone who has taken part directly in the Lord's pastimes. How greatly fortunate that soul is. And similarly, equally fortunate is someone who can hear the science of Godhead from the great acharyas. So there, the story part is, they're firing the sutta up. They're extending their words of praise and appreciation. And it works because sutta gets very inspired by their eagerness to hear. And over again this theme appears in the Bhagavatam, how Sukadeva Goswami is saying with large picture, he's so appreciative of his questions that he explains even more in depth and with greater enthusiasm. He says, your questions are wonderful. You're inspiring me to speak even further. So, then the eagerness, the qualification of the hearer, there's the philosophy that's being woven into the story. Pointed out a few times, but I'll stop pointing it out eventually. You get the idea. The philosophy and the story are interwoven. So what is the qualification that speaks to us directly? What is the qualification of us so that we can assimilate the message of the Bhagavatam also? It gives three specific qualifications, starting with verse 13 and going on through those verses through 20. Three are stated and they're repeated. The theme carries on. If there's a sincere inquiry, that means one actually wants to know the absolute truth. There's a hankering there. And that one is submissive. That is, there's not a challenging spirit, but there's a willingness to carry out what information or instruction or understanding was imparted. And the third is that they have some sense of who to hear from. They're hearing the disciple succession. Again, this disciple succession, or access to the lotus feet of the Lord, is pronounced in this part of the first canto. And the last few minutes. The last few chapters are there, last few verses are there. They're getting ready to stop talking, so they're making their concluding statements. We know that the age of Kali has begun. You're the qualified person. Please take care of all of our doubts and questions. The sacrifice is turned over to you. Kindly, text 22. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence. Just accept you as captain of the ship, very famous verse. For those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, so here it appears again, the qualification of the audience. If they don't want just some entertainment and a social gathering, but they want themselves. The original idea was to diminish the effects of Kali, but they themselves want to go to the topmost position possible by hearing properly from Sutta. And then the final question, question number 6, is found in text 23. So that is, where are religious principles to be found now that Krishna has left the planet? So the homework assignment will be, you won't get graded on this. If you don't do it, I'll probably never know the difference. But for your participation and enlightenment, go through chapter 2 and see if you can find the answers to those 6 questions. We have a few minutes left. I have other points to make, but I'll stop at this point and see if you have any questions.
I think I missed. You said there were 3 important points a little while back before you talked about.
Three qualifications of the speaker, 3 qualifications of the hearer. You got those? Pairs? Or couples?
Yeah, I think you just summarized them. I wasn't sure. I think in fact it was the end of this. You know, like, they are hearing from. So they were being careful who they heard from.
Right from. Say it again, please.
You say that the third point is. They were being careful of who they heard from.
Yeah, so they're hearing the disciple succession. That's the qualification.
The other two were
sincerity and submission. Sincerity means they really want to know. And submission means once they've heard what they want to know, they're going to do something with it. And the third is they're very carefully selected who they're going to hear from. Which connects with the qualification of the speaker also. The speaker is one who has heard the disciple succession. So in both cases, they're very tuned in to being linked in disciple succession by the hearing process.
Well, earlier you had said that Srila Vyasadeva had already written down the chakras book.
Yes.
Are they in
the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
But when you said when Narada Muni came to instruct them, that's my understanding.
He had already completed the 4 chaturasloki verses of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Oh.
And what happened after Narada's speaking Vyasa's meditation, he then expanded 4 into 18,000 verses.
So
he had instructed his son. Yeah.
Yes, Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam before he had Sukadeva Goswami as a son.
That's right. Did everyone understand that question? While Maharaj Pritchett, while Sukadeva Goswami was still within the womb, I spent a lot of time researching this question because of the big discussion for several days, and we were sparing in the detail. The chaturasloki verses were compiled, and were instructed. The Prabhupada writes, the essence of Bhagavatam was instructed to Sukadeva Goswami while still within the womb. He heard the Chaturasotic verses while still within the womb. The entire Srimad Bhagavatam he did not hear at that time. He then his departure, and he left. You hear that description? Going down the road, and he was shaving, and his father called out, and only heard the echo. Later, Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami came back and was instructed thoroughly in the entire science of Srimad Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva. The portion that we hear in this first canto is not that whole history, but the other histories present that explanation, and our Vaishnava Charma is explained that way. Gora?
Questions 3 to 4. What you're saying there, can you please explain the purpose of the Lord's...
The specific process is jatna, but that means also, because his jatna is one part of his lila. Explain the purpose, the meaning behind, and also narrate the various incarnations of the Lord's appearance in this world. We'll see, for example, that after Krishna disappeared from the planet, there's a specific verse that says, and now he has assumed other forms, such as Matsya, etc. There's a connection.
Okay. Shukadeva Goswami, when he was in the womb of his mother, so he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from his father?
He heard the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay, but then he was not convinced.
Not that he wasn't convinced, he was very attracted. But he wanted to hear the rest of it.
And then Krishna came and...
While still within the womb, Krishna came, gave his promise. Don't worry, I give you my promise. If you will not fall prey to life, then you will. Even hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, be protected by Krishna. So in his case, it's a significant task, and it comes in the ninth canto. So that means it's an important, subtle point, and it's an important point. The protection of the specific protection of the Lord is one of the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. So one is protected as long as one is engaged in the hearing or chanting process. I mean, it's nice. It always works out that our institute topics here in Nidanagri fit so nicely together. Worley's topic and Sastra Marja's topic and my topic are because of Bhagavatam. It's all fitting very, very nicely together. Really, we'll be speaking about the graduating from the Kanishna to the Madhyama stage. So much of it, the distinction the Prabhupada characteristically makes, is in terms of preaching. But what's the qualification of the preacher? We're just reading about it. You have to have properly heard. You have to be trained by the art of submissive hearing, Prabhupada says. The art of submissive hearing. Somebody gets involved.
I hear one Srimad Bhagavatam class.
We have 3 minutes.
Sukadev Goswami, there was the Torah of Sukha. So in the form of Prabhupada explained that Sukadev Goswami he's a Naishika Brahmachari. But he spent himself and sent back home to his family some imitation Sukadev who became a Grihastha and had bought it, but that's not...
And that's not a bona fide story.
Yeah.
Who says it?
But in the very...
Yeah, that's perfect, he says. Right?
I remember that. I heard this in the Dory of Sukha.
Okay, why don't you look it up? And then we'll discuss it.
What's question number 4?
Number 4. Please describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And you'll find that in text 14. Brilliant.
The Srimad Bhagavatam, was this spoken at the end of Dwarpa Yuga or the beginning of Kali Yuga?
In the beginning of Kali. Kali had begun. It was narrated for the first time publicly at the time of Maharishi Pariksit's disappearance. Kali had begun. It was narrated again in Nagasharanya sometime after that. How many have you done?
The answers to these questions, like it says, what are the activities, what are the various incarnations, and you want the answers.
No, what I want you to do is look in chapter 2 and identify, because this one will come in chapter 3, chapter 3. Various incarnations are in a summary way narrated. Chapter 3.
Oh.
So you won't find that in chapter 2. It's not, you just have to say where it's responded to.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
So for homework, you just want the verse numbers listed.
That's right. That's all.
The sacrifice in the Nagasharanya, was it 1,000 years community or different sacrifice?
Their plan was 1,000-year sacrifice. I don't know if I've asked, but I haven't found any clear answer. What happened when Srimad Bhagavatam narration was finished? What happened to their sacrifice? I don't know the answer to that.
Were you making commentary on the middle of the Torah?
Yeah.
You were saying that you're serving properly, that the rasa relationship with the Supreme Lord is not covered in the Sutra.
That's right.
But yet,